You're listening to Talk of the Rock with your host, Kayla DeRoche. Today, we will be speaking about a upcoming bill that's meant to protect some resources we have in the state. And we have its introducer, Representative Louise Stutes, here with us to talk about it. And also, we have Sam Snyder on the phone. He's a sport fisherman who works with Trout Unlimited, and Bren Watkins, a fisherman here in Kodiak. Sam, can you hear us okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. Before we introduce our guests a little more detail, I was wondering if Representative Stutes could introduce her bill a little bit.
Sure. It's House Bill 199, and it is a habitat bill, essentially, and this is a bill that will update a 50-year-old law that has not been updated in 50 years, and it is it pertains to, of course, our wild salmon and our resources in the state, which are a pretty valuable resource to the state of Alaska, and it will the intent of this bill The intent of this bill is to maintain healthy, sustainable waters for our fisheries. The bill is not intentioned to put any kind of resource out of business. What it's trying to do is define what needs to be done to maintain clean, clear waters for a sustainable fishery, which is, as we all know, the number one private employer in the state of Alaska and a huge economic driver for the state. So I would say in a nutshell, that's the intent of this bill.
Could you speak a little bit about how it emerged and what set off the need for this kind of
This bill has been a work in progress for several years, and as a matter of fact, it was originated by Representative Bryce Edgman, our current Speaker of the House, and being that he's been pretty busy, he asked if I would mind carrying it for him, and I said, absolutely not. I'm a believer in it, and I would be happy to carry this bill. And I think that with the recent development, combined with the multitude of transboundary issues, now is the time to put this on the front burner.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the changes it makes, specifically to Title 16 in the legislation?
Well, it makes several changes. I think the largest change that it makes is currently the Department of Fish and Game logs streams and determines whether or not they're anadromous and then logs them in a book. And if you want to develop and a stream has not been logged, then the Fish and Game has the onus of going out and determining whether or not, in fact, it isn't an anadromous stream before anything else can be done. This bill says every waterway, every stream in the state of Alaska is considered to be anadromous. And if you are going to develop and you don't believe it's anadromous, then it is up to you to show that it is not anadromous, and you must also bear the expense of doing so rather than the state bearing those costs. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the biggest changes and one that has that's in the forefront.
Right. I think the last time we spoke about this, it was in March, right around Comfish, and I think you had introduced it that Monday. Has there been any major changes in the draft since then?
There's been some fine-tuning to it. As I said back then, it was a pretty restrictive bill, which allows us the flexibility to work with other resource agencies as well as the Native associations in order to make sure it's a workable document for everybody. That's the intent when we're all finished, is to have a workable document. One of the other things that this bill will do is it will outline clearly, in a more clear and concise fashion, regulations for the Department of Fish and Game to follow. And frankly, they're pretty happy with that idea. the Department of Fish and Game is, and they're supportive of that in this bill, because it's always easier to do your job, whatever it is, if you have clear, concise instructions or outlines that you need to follow.
As far as I understand it, one of the seeds of this bill was some complaints before the Board of Fisheries that Title 16 was a little vague in its language. Brent, you sounded a little more familiar with that. Can you kind of give the fisherman's side of that?
Well, the original language was that it put it at the discretion of the commissioner, whether or not he felt that something was of an impact or not and the extent of that impact. The new language breaks it up into several tiers where you've got small project, kind of ubiquitous use, four-wheelers and stuff like that. You can get a long-term permit for a reasonable cost. Small-scale development, that has its own tier so that small developers and landowners aren't working on the same level of permitting as Pebble Mine or big projects like that. And then it also breaks out in the fiscal responsibility to the people applying for the permits instead of the state, so that it kind of helps us out with our budget there and puts the onus for permitting and investigation on the people wanting to do the projects instead of slamming all to the state and having us dig it back out.
And you said that you had been to the Board of Fisheries meeting that was in Kodiak. What kind of mood was coming from the audience, or what would you describe the tone as?
I never heard anybody speak against this bill. Everybody was in favor of it, especially where it could apply to Bristol Bay and the Chewitna and similar situations. The being given a voice back into the process, it puts the fishermen and the people of Alaska back at the table on all these projects by giving us a more open public comment period and advertising of these projects as they come up.
Right. Have you heard at all from the development side? Has there been any strong opinion from that side?
There's been some concern, and there's been some issues. We had some issues that were brought up by the DOT, which we have managed to work collectively and come up with a mutually agreeable situation. They were concerned about how it would affect their putting in culverts and that type of thing with the language, and that's been addressed. Another thing, we've used terminology which clearly states, as opposed to a little bit ambiguous, that this will not affect fish management, which means it will not affect closures of fisheries. And that was some concern, and this bill will not affect that. The management of the fisheries will continue on as it does now in relation to opening and closures.
And this will directly change the language of Title 16?
This will change language in Title 16. Absolutely.
When was the last time it was updated?
It has never been updated.
Oh.
That's the issue.
Okay.
We are working on a 50-year-old statute, a 50-year-old law that has never been updated or addressed.
Okay.
And as we all know, in 50 years, there's been a lot of changes in all of our resources. So that's been one of the driving forces behind this, is we need to update them and become current and apply appropriate methods and laws for today.
Right. And we still have Sam on the phone, who worked with Trout Unlimited, one of the organizations that are kind of geared towards protecting the resources. Sam, could you describe what Trout Unlimited does?
Yeah, so we're a nationally based organization, but we have a dozen or so staff in Alaska and have been working up here for, I think, 15 plus years, and really working on protecting the best, most critical and most vibrant habitat. I think in Alaska, we have an opportunity to not have to restore our fisheries if we look at the history of trout and salmon in the West, you see a lot of decline of fisheries, whether it's to some degree overfishing, it's impacts of development, it's impacts of dams, it's impacts of mining. All of these impacts, sort of large projects or sort of death by a thousand cuts, bring us to this point where in the Pacific Northwest, for example, we're spending billions of dollars a year to restore fisheries. And we have the luxury of that sort of that hindsight to look at those lessons. And this bill is taking that into account and saying, let's make the changes now so that we don't go down that same road as our, neighbors down in the lower 48, so that we can be proactive and update the laws now. So we've worked everywhere from Bristol Bay to South Central Alaska and the Mat-Su on the Susitna River, Southeast Alaska, the Tongass National Forest, and transboundary watersheds. So we work around the state, and we're seeing, the potential impacts of projects could have. We're also talking to fishermen, sport fishermen, but we work with Alaska natives. We work with the commercial fishing communities, and we talk to them on the river, at trade shows and different places, and hear, continued concerns about not going down those same paths. So we were certainly excited to see this bill come out of House Fisheries Committee, and are grateful for Representative Edgman and Representative Stutes for the work done in it. We were also very involved in the Board of Fish process and hearing a lot of those same comments of, we need to be proactive now. Let's create clear standards so that ADF&G can protect our fisheries. Let's create clear opportunity for Alaskans to have a say in Alaskan permitting processes where we don't have a clear voice right now. And then some of these cost burden issues where we're shifting the cost away from the state, putting it on developers, allowing ADF&G to more adequately and effectively do their job.
Other than this bill, do you have any other suggestions for how Alaskans and Alaskan fishermen can make their voice more heard?
I think part of it's just getting involved. And, when you're just out, say, fishing, or you're at a sports show, for example, a lot of people come by and they're looking, they go to a sports show and they look they're there to look for, say, fishing gear. And then they stop by your booth and they start talking to you. And before you know it, you realize that they're seeing things on the river, or they're seeing things in their fisheries that maybe they have questions about, or maybe drive them to want to get involved. And that's everything from like doing stream cleanups and picking up trash to being involved in some of these bigger, maybe trickier, more controversial issues, the pebble mines, the Susitna dams of the world. But what they realize when they start talking to you is there are ways to get involved, and it could be as simple as turning out to a town hall, for example, on Thursday in Kodiak, or participating in the Board of Fish process and going to, your regional advisory committee meeting and getting to know those folks and talking to them and expressing your concerns. There's so many ways in which we, as users of the fisheries, can be involved in the management and the protection of our fisheries, that you just have to, take a couple steps. And it's once you sort of get over that hurdle of taking those steps, then, your voice can really carry a long way. And so we just encourage folks to, if you love to use the resource, if you depend upon the resource, then, think about also getting involved in different avenues. And that can be from education to, really engaging Board of Fish processes or coming out to town halls.
So it seems like a big challenge trying to balance preserving the resources, but also giving development its fair chance, because it's still important in the state. So what is your approach to that? What are your thoughts about that?
I think we can't deny that development is a critical part of the state. It's a critical part of the state's history. But I think that we have to, if we're looking at laws that have dictate how the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is going to permit projects that could impact fisheries, we need to have basic scientific criteria for them to evaluate the impacts of those projects. And for example, Title 16, this section of Title 16 that deals with fish habitat permitting, does not have those clear scientific standards. And so when I talk to people at all levels, from, you know, fishermen at trade shows to you know, leaders in our communities, you always say, well, the Title 16 says this. And then you ask them, do you think there should be a list of what those criteria for proper protection are? And everybody says yes. And then you say, but they're not there. And so we want to see those there. And I think that's the first step to good management. It's good permitting. You strike a balance. It's not saying you can't develop. It's just setting clear, certain standards that everybody knows and everybody agrees, you know, everybody understands up front what's allowed and what's not allowable. And I think it helps the industry better prepare. It helps the department do their job, and it ensures Alaskans that their fisheries are going to be, you know, taken seriously when sort of caught in these decision-making processes.
Is there one part of HB 199 that you've heard the most about from fishermen or from people in fisheries? Is there one effect that you can pinpoint that you think will be the most impactful?
That's a good question. I think all Alaskans want to have a voice in the process. And I think when they realize that in this particular permit, and really in, there are a lot of ways, depending on the project and the permits it requires, particularly federal permits, there are ways in which Alaskans can weigh in, but there's not clear ways for Alaskans to weigh in on the Alaska permits. And so this gives them a real opportunity to weigh in if these changes were to go into effect. Public notice, potential, depending on the size of the project, the impact of the project, public comment opportunities. And that's something that really resonates well with Alaskans. Shifting the cost away from the state in a time when we are having budget problems, that also resonates really well with Alaskans. But I think what we hear day in and day out is that Alaskans of all kinds use fish, depend upon fish. It's an economic driver. It's our cultural heritage. And, you know, as a father and who fishes with friends and who have young children, we want to make sure that our children and their grandchildren or their children, our grandchildren, have a chance to the same opportunities to catch fish that we do, to rely on them, to fill their freezers, to support their culture and their history. And I think that's what you hear most and foremost. People talk in the big themes about how important it is. And that's what we keep hearing and why we're excited about many of the things in this bill.
I think that to add to that, most Alaskans that I've had conversations with, they're not opposed to development. They want responsible development. That's what it boils down to. Everybody's got to go to work. We all know that. We just want to be responsible and maintain all of our resources in this state.
Brent, is there anything you wanted to add? I feel like I want to give you another chance before we close off this part of the conversation to share your opinions.
I think that this is an important bill for building strong coastal communities. This keeps the aspect of Alaska that drives our overall culture, our native culture, and our subsistence lifestyles vibrant. It allows for economic drivers to be present in Alaska's future, both in the fisheries and outside the fisheries. But it's a true good step towards responsible development. We can't do a short-term gain and throw out the long-term valuability of salmon in the process. And this helps make sure that it's going to be there.
Right.
And I will just add, if anyone has any comments, they can certainly send them to me via email, rep.louise.stutes@akleg.gov. And I have an office here in Kodiak, 486-8872. I'm interested in any and all comments, positive or negative.
What is the future of this bill?
My next anticipated hearing is going to be in the interior, in the Bethel area. I'm going to have a public hearing up in the Bethel area. I really want to get as much input from the public on this, and then as soon as we go back into session in January, this will be at the top of the list in the fisheries, with the fisheries committee.
And of course, we have a community forum coming up.
Yes, we do. Thursday at the convention center, Kodiak Convention Center, from 6 to 8. And we will have six other legislators there, as well as a John Hosey, who is from the governor's office. And we will have Pat Pitney from OMB, and also a representative from AKLNG, and it is open to the public, and we certainly welcome you, and we'd like the public to come and hopefully, you know, direct any questions that they might not have been answered, or there any topics at all. This is for the public and for Kodiak.
Are there any themes that you want to bring up in particular?
Whatever the public wishes to speak about is what we're going to speak about, and our Speaker of the House, Bryce Edgman, will be there as well.
Okay, great. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. We also have someone from the Coast Guard base with us here today, Jeff Good, who is the new commanding officer on base. And why don't you introduce yourself a little bit?
Okay, name's Jeff Good. Obviously, I came from a station here from Norfolk, Virginia, and it's my third time back in Alaska. I was in Kodiak from 2006 to 2008, and then in Juneau from 97 to 2000. So definitely excited to be back here. My children started school here, and my kids are in high school now, so they'll probably finish up here as well. So we're definitely excited to be back in the Kodiak community, and being in the Coast Guard and traveling, you know, being at many different locations throughout my career. Kodiak is one of those special places that we're just very fortunate to be back, just because the special ties I think the Coast Guard has with the community here in Kodiak. It's definitely unique and exciting to be back here.
So for those who haven't heard maybe some of the other Talk of the Rocks we've done with, or the one we did with your predecessor, could you explain what your position entails?
Okay. I'm the commanding officer of the base, and mainly what the base does here in Kodiak is it supports the operational units that we have. So we kind of maintain the facilities. We also take care of the people. So we have a medical center there on the base as well. So we look after the health and well-being of the active duty members, while also looking after the families as well. And then also housing is a big part of the base. So we maintain the housing units. And then we also schedule the houses for those coming into the base. So it's really taking the administrative, trying to take the administrative burden and the facilities burden off of our operators, such as the air station and our cutters, and then taking that burden off them so they can concentrate on doing the mission of search and rescue and the other statutory requirements that we're required to do in the Coast Guard.
Could you kind of give a picture of what the administration is like? It just seems like every once in a while I hear about a random position. I'm like, oh, that's cool. What does it mean?
Right. So it's really, if you look at what the base does, it's the logistics side. So we're taking care of all the shipping and receiving and making sure that we have the berthing for the crews that are living on base, the housing that's living for the people on base, and again, looking at maintaining the all the facilities we have. So it's, I guess if you kind of look at it, you have your operations that are doing the day-to-day operations. So their focus is on search and rescue and law enforcement and fisheries. So that's kind of their main focus. And then if they have issues with their families or housing or things like that, then they kind of reach over to us and let us know what they are. And then our folks are the ones that really try to take care of that and make sure it's supported.
Was Kodiak one of your top choices when you decided to move on from your last position? Or
it was. I actually, this job came open, and I actually requested a short tour in my previous job to even compete for this job. So it was top of my list, number one on my list. And I've kind of been a politician the last probably the 3 or 4 months before the assignment season even came out, talking to different people, letting them know I was definitely interested. So I've been trying to get the job since I left here, trying to get back here since I left in 08.
What about Kodiak was so compelling to you?
Well, I love the outdoors, so that's big. My wife's actually from Wrangell, so she grew up in Wrangell, Alaska. So for her, it's getting back up to Alaska as well. Both my children love Alaska. My son, Chase, he loves to fish and hunt. So getting back up here for him. And then it's just also the community, just have that sense of community here in Kodiak that you don't get at a lot of the places that Coast Guard's folks are typically stationed, because you're typically in a bigger community. You don't have those really close ties that we have with the community here, because it really is, I mean, we're kind of dependent on each other out here. And we really support each other. So everything we do on base has an impact here in the community. And then obviously everything the community does has a direct impact to us. So it's that close tie that we have with the community, I think, that's really appealing to a lot of the folks we have here in the Coast Guard.
What about the dynamic on base is different for Kodiak as opposed to other bases you've been on?
I think it's pretty similar where you have a big Coast Guard base. I mean, obviously, this is from a geographic standpoint, this is the biggest base we have in the Coast Guard. I've lived on base at, I think, three other locations, and the dynamic there is pretty similar other than the outdoors activities. I mean, we have a great MWR program here in Kodiak, the best I've ever seen from any Coast Guard location we have. I'm sorry, it's a morale, welfare, and recreation. So it's really the opportunities that we have for our folks here, such as the bowling alley, the movie theater. We have the Golden Anchor, which is kind of a club we have on base. And then we have one of the best gyms I've seen that we have in the Coast Guard is here in Kodiak. And then we have also have some morale boats that folks are able to take out, that it's kind of unique here to Kodiak. You just don't really see that anywhere else in the Coast Guard.
I've heard you have pizza too.
We do have pizza.
How is it?
The pizza's good.
Yeah,
it's good. It's probably not as good as some of the locations we have here in the community, but it does really well.
Well, everyone has a favorite pizza, and everyone disagrees about it too.
Yeah, it's how you cook it, so it's a little bit different, but.
I personally think I make amazing pizzas, so as long as we have the ability to make our own food. We'll be fine. So we just have about one more minute left. Welcome to the island. And for those of you who might have missed it, the community forum that we were speaking about earlier is Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. And it is at the Convention Center, which is at 211 Rezanoff Drive. So you guys should check it out. Come by. Thank you guys so much for coming on Talk the Rock. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.